You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 24th, 2016. And watch out! This podcast is on fire.
Oh, see what you did there. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. Scott, are you into camping?
You like the
great outdoors?
I mean,
I like to drive through Yosemite.
We go camping every once in a while. Like Hannah's family goes camping every year, and we'll hang out there for a couple days. Never been like, you know, I'm just gonna go to the Yukon or something.
Right, like really,
you
know, really like, out there, yeah. Off in the wild.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah, me neither. The way that I see it is it's probably dangerous. There are bears. There are elk.
I saw that one movie where that guy got his arm trapped in nature.
Exactly.
And then had to cut his arm off. Ate his arm.
Yeah, exactly. There are regretful fathers out there, you know? Who knows what you'll encounter. Today on the podcast, we are talking about the much-anticipated Firewatch.
Yep.
This is from Campo Santo.
We really missed out during 2015 saying Firewatch Watch.
Ah, damn it.
Really fucked up.
Firewatch Watch 2015.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the game.
Yeah.
It is very much a story narrative driven game, and a short one relatively at that. So we're probably going to give you some pretty significant spoilers, but we'll talk a little bit about the general sense of the game first. Yeah. You know, we should also say we consider some of those fine folks at Campo Santo friends of ours. So if that colors your impression of our impressions on the game, take that.
We also consider some of them enemies.
That's also true. Sworn enemies.
Yeah. So, you know, take that into consideration.
So this is a game that is about a fellow by the name of Hank who joins the Firewatch to sort of...
Henry to you.
Henry, yeah. To escape some personal drama and all the sort of conversations he has with his fellow ranger, Delilah.
He is out there as a fire ranger, like, by himself. He is one of those people that you see in those tall towers who just spend the summer out there looking for the forest on being on fire.
Like, which apparently exists. Like, there are real people who...
It's rangers, man.
I presume also have weird problems or just are extreme loners. I don't know. I wonder if the team met any actual fire watchmen. I know they went camping.
We'll have to bug Nels about it or something. Yeah.
Weird.
Okay.
So they're out there in the woods. They're talking to Delilah. Delilah, by the way, happens to be the name of the host of a radio program that apparently plays nationwide that plays like romance songs. Did you ever listen to that?
Weird. Wait.
Delilah?
The actor?
Delilah. No. Just the name Delilah.
Oh, okay.
I'm explaining to you how during this entire game,
you were thinking that.
I kept thinking of like really shitty 90s R&B, like smooth R&B. Ugh, gross. Let's start us off.
Yeah.
Scott, what did you think of Firewatch?
I liked Firewatch a lot. I don't think it's a surprise that anyone would hear me say that because I liked The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, and I liked Gone Home, and I liked Amnesia, and I, you know, a lot of what some would derisively call walking simulators. Mm-hmm. Like,
there's slight jogging in Firewatch.
Yeah, this is some jogging simulator. I think actually that's what the dash button is called. I think it's called jog.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a first-person light adventure game where you are basically there to interact with the scenery, not to like shoot a bunch of dudes.
Totally.
And I actually think that, like Gone Home, it does a lot of cool things that are uniquely cool to video games that don't have to do with shooting dudes in the face.
Right.
You know, like, I think it does like a lot of subtle cool things that make it uniquely fit to its media. But it doesn't fit into your traditional, you know, Quake clone type of experience.
Well, what are some of those interactive elements that you're talking about? If you can talk about them without spoiling anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, like, the interesting non-spoilerish piece of this game is about the question of, like, how does it make you, like, does it simulate well what it's like being in the woods?
Yeah.
And also, I would be interested in how you would think this would strike someone that maybe doesn't play a lot of video games.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a first-person game, which already, like, I think, especially if you're doing mouse and keyboard, I think people have a little bit of an easier time understanding, like, here's my perspective, here's what I'm doing in it, you know?
I mean, this is definitely the type of game you would show, you know, your friends and family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially because it's not, you know, there's no time-based challenges.
This is the game to bring home to mama.
I think, like Gone Home, and I think it shows that they are friends with the Gone Home team, like, they use the environment and the objects in the environment. Like, you can pick up a bunch of stuff in this game, mm-hmm. even like a rock or a pine cone.
Yep.
Just to look at it and then set it down. And you can drop it, or you can do the like brilliant thing that Gone Home came up with, which is put back.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't look like you're a maniac just strewing things all around.
Or you can carry it around and pose with it.
You can like do the camera stuff. Like, I mean, I just think there's a lot of, you know, it's a pretty contained environment, but the stuff in it feels like it's meant to actually be explored.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The way that the two characters communicate also, if you haven't played the game, is that anytime you find certain objects in the game or an encounter or what have you, you can choose to radio Delilah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I, of course, radio Delilah every chance I could get. The voice acting by Rich Sommer of Mad Men fame.
It was so funny. I didn't know it was him, and I was thinking the whole game, I was like, this guy really sounds like that Mad Men guy. And then I looked it up afterwards and it was him.
Yeah, so he's great as Henry. And then Sissy Jones, who plays Delilah, is superb. Yeah. I think she's probably the strongest voice actor, to be honest, of the two.
I looked her up too, and she's basically in every video game.
Yeah, it's another one of those people.
It's nuts,
very prolific.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to hear them have the conversation. They work really, really well together. Yeah. So naturally, I'm sort of dialing her up. But what I find interesting is that, you know, for Gone Home or for a lot of other walking simulator type games, and not just walking simulator, right? Like, you see it all across games. One of the primary ways of telling a story is through audio logs. You see it in The Witness. There are audio logs all over the place. Well, not all over the place, but frequently.
There's frequent,
in The Witness. And you find it, and then you basically are delivered a monologue by somebody not present.
Mm-hmm.
And that form of storytelling has gotten on my nerves over the past few years. And Firewatch basically takes that same idea, that same level of convenience, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, here's a piece of audio, here's a piece of story I can engage with. I can engage with it on my own terms, but doesn't remove it from the realm of storytelling. It doesn't remove it from the characters. It's not someone just talking at me, right?
Yeah.
So if I see something and I want to hear a conversation and participate, I can call up Delilah, and then there's a genuine conversation with even some you know, dialogue choices mixed in there. I feel like it's such a more fluid way to get a story told.
Yeah.
And it does the outlandish thing of, oh, it's people talking to each other. I don't know how easily replicable this type of storytelling is, but I would love to see it implemented more frequently in something that does choose to tell a narrative-based game without, you know, having to veer too far from the audio log norm.
Well, and I mean, that, I think it's, I think the scope of this game actually helps in that fact, because there's only a handful of characters, so you're not dealing with like dozens of voice actors having to get them all in the room to talk to each other, or having to get them all to record lines. Like, you're able to like do a much deeper dive into a single relationship versus kind of like scattering around, like, oh, here's Atlas and here's you know, Professor Chong and here's, you know, whatever. Like, there's a million different characters in a thing like BioShock versus like there's two or three
people
here.
But I mean, even in BioShock, right? If we're talking about like Atlas or, you know, him calling you up on your radio, that's like, hey, would you kindly go fetch me this fucking wrench or whatever? I need to fix my bio suit. Even that tends to seem like such discrete little portions of the game, right? Like, I think while yes, you're not really interacting with the world in some crazy way, right? There's no jump button. You're not like crawling all over trees and fucking hunting down bears and stuff. But it feels like every time you have a conversation with Delilah, it doesn't slow you down. It doesn't feel like a discrete thing, right? Like, you move from one thing to the next to the next. Even the subtle way, I mean, you know, it's kind of a small thing, but being able to queue up your next conversation is cool, because it means like, oh, I'm not skipping through dialogue. I'm not, you know, forgetting what I'm doing here. And I can still engage in this conversation and still get story bits without feeling like I'm being jarred out of the play experience.
I also think that, in addition to the dialogue tree, which I think is pretty cool, like, it's a radio, and so you have to, it makes talking feel like the task it is, because you have to use the radio. You're not just saying something. You have to bring up your hand to click into the radio and then start talking. Like, there's a physicality to it when you're playing that I think is subtle but nice.
It threw me off base at first because it's like a little bit of a weird button combination on a controller.
Yeah, and I went back and forth, too, just to experiment. Like, I was playing around with the mouse and keyboard and then playing around with the controller. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you've ever used a radio, it's not necessarily a natural thing to remember. I need to click in this button to talk and then let go to stop. And, you know, like, it's...
And then say over and out. Because you need to be professional, please.
I think that, like, combined with the landscape, which... I mean, they either got extremely lucky or probably spent more likely hundreds of hours designing it so that the conversations fit the kind of distance of the landscape very, very well.
Yeah.
Like, by the time...
Well, unless you're like me and get completely lost.
Yeah. There was one time where I spent a good 10 minutes trying to figure out where to go.
Yes. Well, so I actually did what somebody suggested online and turned off my own location on the map.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, so I had to remember by, like, landmarks, mm-hmm. which was great for the most part. I really enjoyed that experience until the very end of the game, I got turned around.
Oh,
and it's like, you know, it's supposed to be this,
and the,
like,
environment changes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And there's supposed to be this, like, denouement.
Yeah.
And I just was, the wind was removed from those sails a little bit because I was like, where the fuck am I right now?
I mean, I think that's the... Going into the navigational aspect, I think that's what makes this feel like a traditional video game in some ways. You know, not always. Like, you're still not, like, chasing after a high score or something. But, mm-hmm. like, you do have to think about where you're going. Like, there's not a nav button, like, mm-hmm. to just kind of give you some breadcrumbs or to paint something in the environment. Like, nothing really, you know... exists, like, go here right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to take a look at the map and figure out where to go.
Right.
Or remember, oh, I remember my lookout tower is past this river, so I can just keep walking.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, the sense of sort of bumping into things is really neat. You know, when you finally do get a grasp of the geography, and then you're surprised by something in the geography, it's kind of a neat experience. Like, you know, one of the first things I did was go down a wrong path and end up by the river and, like, jumping over all of these rocks. And I finally realized, okay, I don't actually have to go this direction. Mm. But, hey, I suddenly found a river. Okay, now this is a new landmark to add to my map of this area.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. And, you know, over the length of the story, what Henry's there for the duration of a summer. So it's like, you know, 3 months.
3 months, yeah.
And, you know, I don't really know what it's like to completely get familiar with a new place other than the type of experience you have when you first move somewhere. But, you know, towards the end, I was feeling very comfortable with that space, right? I didn't think, oh, God, there's probably a bear around here or what have you, right? I like to think that the sense of comfort that you might get with the landscape mirrors somewhat the sense of comfort you might get if you were actually there for, you know, 60 days.
Well, and I think, maybe we'll save this for the spoiler section, but I feel like there's also a lot of restraint in the early parts of the game to not have a lot of action. And I think that's also meant to lull you into feeling comfortable and familiar with where you're supposed to be. What else? I was going to mention something about the space again, but I guess I forgot. Did it make you feel like you were actually, like, you know, I don't know, you visited, like, Yosemite or whatever. I mean, how did that feel?
I mean, you know, the art by Jane Ng and Ollie Moss is, like, just so good. It's an absolutely gorgeous game. At the same time, you know, it's very, like, heightened color and shapes, and it, you know, doesn't feel like I'm actually there. It's more like an impressionist painting of what it might feel like being in that space.
Yeah.
And as the space changes or you find new environments, you definitely get, like, a deeper sense of place. And, you know, the ability to take pictures, for example, which you can then print out. And I did. I ordered my nice. Set photos. is really neat, and you get some really absolutely gorgeous shots that look great. I mean, I don't think it's meant to be, you know, photorealistic.
Yeah.
But you do get the sense of, like, oh man, there's some awe and some wonder here, right?
I like the sound a lot, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought really made it. I mean, it's impressionistic visually, but hearing the crunch or listening for something that, you know, you hear something that you know, maybe you're a little bit nervous for, or maybe you're like, oh, that sounds like water. I never knew that water was over here.
It's that sound of nature, the sweet, sweet sound of bitchy teenagers out there.
And, well, that's the other thing. I feel like that this game does a really good job of, you know, when you're camping and you're on a trail or something.
You hate total strangers.
Well, it's weird kind of to see another stranger because you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Are they nice? Are you going to be annoyed by them? Are they serial killers? Like, you feel more exposed out in the wilderness than you do just walking around on a city street because there's fewer people around.
Yeah, when you first see the silhouette of somebody.
Yeah.
And then you sound like, at least for me, I reported it to Delilah.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh no, like another person, that's unheard of. But, you know, this is a public park and people go out there and they camp and stuff. You forget that, like, oh, right, I'm just being paranoid.
Yeah.
Which is the same sort of, like, playfulness, I think, that Gone Home has with its sense of horror.
Yeah.
Because it knows that you are prone to be scared. You're prone to find, like, meaning and, like, something to be paranoid about.
Those shadows are actually monsters.
Yeah, exactly. So it's cool for Delilah to sort of make fun of you. Like, just chill out, man. Chill.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What else can we talk about before we go too deep into spoilers? I think there are certain, and you know, the fact that Jake and Sean, who were the two leads in season one of The Walking Dead, also worked on this game. I think the impression that your dialogue choices are crafting your character, even if there's no math behind that, is really strong.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few branching paths here and there, but really it's more about, like, what type of person are you going to make Hank?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what type of person are you going to make Lee? You know, it's that sort of thing where it probably doesn't make a huge difference to some of the, or at least, you know, the majority of the dialogue, but it does give me a sense of who I thought this person was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you've seen a lot of complaints, as you always see with this type of game, where people go, oh, your choices don't actually matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a weird way, I think that's kind of the point for these two characters in particular.
Yep.
Because it's very similar to that film Little Children, because, you know, Henry is running away from, you know, an issue he's dealing with his wife.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that, oh, I'm in a new unmarked space. I'm out in the wilderness. This is the opportunity to recreate myself.
Mm.
And you see it in a lot of narratives, right? You see it in 27 Hours as well, right? Like, people go out in the wilderness and they say, I'm going to have this revelatory experience. I'm going to come back a new person.
Yeah.
And the thesis of this story is basically, well, no, you know, you are still the same person. You have to confront those things. Like, if you really want to be a good person, you need to understand that you're a fucking grown up and you need to deal with some things that are really uncomfortable to deal with. So that idea that, oh, your choices don't entirely matter, you can't completely recreate Henry, is significant, because Henry can't and is not free to completely reinvent himself in the wilderness either.
Yeah. I think that's also something that The Walking Dead, especially season one, did, where you were playing as a character, you were not a blank slate making a character.
Yes.
And I think that's something that, like, if I can generalize about video game players have a really hard time accepting.
Being somebody else? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's, and you see this in the most ugly ways when, like, it's like the race or gender of a character, or in the most banal ways where it's like, I didn't get to pick my dialogue choice. It's like, this is not a blank slate D&D character sheet. Like, you're playing as someone, like, in The Walking Dead, Lee killed a dude. Like, that's just how it is.
That's canon.
Yeah, guess, like, you can't say he did or didn't. Like, and in this one, you know, Hank had a, you know, pretty bad falling out with his wife. And there's no way you can, you know, retcon that. Like, that's just who he is as a character. And I think there are not a lot of video games out there that force you to explore a character rather than asking you to create a character and then kind of explore it.
Yeah.
Like, this is like a pre-made character and it's your job to maybe shift him left or right, but the core of him is always going to be this character. Mm-hmm. It's like a novel or something, you know, like it's something that there's more authorial intent in. And I think it makes people uncomfortable when they're not used to that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if the thesis is basically about how escapism doesn't really work, especially in a medium where,
like, a criticism of the medium
itself. I mean, in a weird way it is, right? And so I can understand people leaving this game and being uncomfortable, and I think that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you can't really escape everything that you want to escape, so
shall
we get into spoilers?
Spoilers. Spoiler alerts. Here's where we talk about the aliens,
people. Oh god. So real quick, now that we're in spoilers, what did you think of the Twine sort of character creation in the beginning?
I like that a lot, actually. And I think it might have even, like, you could have played that as a Twine story. Actually, yeah. That was actually one of my favorite parts of the game, weirdly enough. Like, and I don't mean that the rest of the game sucked.
I love this kind of stuff.
I just mean, like, I thought that the kind of starkness and the tone of the voice fit the characters really well, and that it just set you up for quickly, what is the background of these people?
So what was your background? Did you send your wife to, like, a home?
Oh, no. Okay, so here's the story, right? Hank and Jules, they get together. Jules tragically starts to undergo early onset dementia via Alzheimer's. And, you know, their marriage falls apart because of that. And so you have to make some pretty harsh choices. And I was playing Hank as someone who's just kind of like, as long as we can ignore this, it's fine. Like, if we can ignore this, we won't think about it. So, like, he kept her living with her.
Yeah.
And then her parents came and took her away, basically, when it was discovered that he was just a drunk letting her live in squalor.
Yeah. That's rough, man. That story is really rough. Yeah. And the weight of that is weird, right? Because, you know, at the very end of the game, Delilah and Henry sort of swap what the other should do.
Yep.
And it seems pretty clear that Delilah wants you to go talk to your wife.
Yeah.
And my response to that was, like, I don't think she'll even know who I am anymore. Yeah. And it's rough, man, because, like, there's an element where you want to go, yeah, Henry's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And he did kind of, like, mistreat his wife. And he definitely shouldn't have been out drinking while she was home alone in, like, a scared state. But at the same time, like, that's something that's really hard to deal with.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's going to go to see his wife in Australia, who's now living with her parents, and make amends and fall in love again and stay happily married. Like, that is gone, right? Because Alzheimer's is a progressive disease, and there's no cure, and it'll only get worse, right? So there's a sense, like, I don't know. And this is actually, I mean, maybe this is a criticism of the game because it's kind of something I wanted to see Henry deal with. But I don't know what results will come of him doing what Delilah suggests and actually visiting his wife. Like, what does Henry look like as a better person? I mean, don't think that there's space in the game to explore that.
There's a question of whether he's even going to follow that advice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because, so apparently there's two ways the game can end. We're jumping around like crazy, but you can either leave or you can stay.
What do you mean you could leave?
You could
stay there as the whole forest burns?
Yeah.
And just die?
Or just stay as the ranger and live there, you know, and that's your new job or whatever.
Do you just not get into the helicopter?
Apparently. I didn't try that out, but people on the internet are saying you can do that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I just got into the helicopter.
Me too, but like...
Get into the chopper.
Well, even if you... let's put that aside and even say you get into a helicopter, there's no... Nothing is forcing him to follow Delilah's advice, so there's no... There's no guarantee that he's going to bring closure to that, even though that's probably more for him than it is for you know, his wife.
I think a lot of the Henry changing aspects for me were his alcohol consumption, because he's, you know, he's clearly a drunk in the beginning.
I kept him a drunk the whole time. A denial drunk.
Oh, really?
Every morning when I left the Firewatch Tower, I would take the whiskey with me.
Oh, really?
As just like, oh, this is a thing I do. I'm packing up my stuff. I look at it. Oh, I might want this.
That's awesome.
Like, I took it. Yeah.
Because you can carry some of the beers, I guess, back to your location.
Well,
too.
And I justified that by saying, oh, man, who would litter here? And I would just like pack everything
up. Wow, that's so funny. Yeah, like, so like for me, it was, you know, this is my opportunity to get clean. And at the end of the game, you get to Delilah's tower and there's a bottle of whiskey that she was talking about earlier. Yeah. And as the forest is burning, like, I grab the whiskey and I just throw it off her tower into the woods. I'm like, you know what? This is it. This is the break. Like, I can't.
And you know what I did when I got to that tequila?
Did you take it with you?
Yeah, I took it with me. Because
your Henry is a total asshole, by the way.
Well, because I don't know. I just got such a sense, and I think it was all set by the Twine story at the very beginning, of this is someone who is in full denial. He doesn't even know he's in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't even think of himself as an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like, he just knows that, oh, you know, I like to have whiskey in my pack. You know, like, that's just something I do, you know? And at least Delilah is a little bit more upfront about, like, she likes to get drunk.
I mean, she denies it too a little bit, right? Like her relationship with her with yeah. Spanish boyfriend, yeah. like leaving him when he was basically like most in need.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the sense that if these two characters were to be together, it would probably be a really unhealthy relationship because yeah. they would both support the other person's dependencies. And so when you don't meet her at the end, and it's weird because you sort of get the opportunity of like, oh, how about we make a go of things?
Oh, yeah.
And
which I didn't take either. Like, I was all in denial about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, oh, you know, I'm married. And it's like, you're not married anymore. Like, maybe legally, but like, she probably doesn't know who you are. You know, like, yeah. he's still not thinking of her as someone who has a terminal illness.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you go down the relationship route then with...
I did. I mean, a little bit. There's not a whole lot there, right? Like, at a certain point, the game jumps into the future, and you've yeah. already been talking to her, and there's, like, a romantic
yeah.
Moment at nighttime, and she's telling you, oh, you know, I don't talk to anybody like I talk to you. And the last conversation I said was like, oh, my God, I'm scared of bears or something like that, right? So
I wonder if I even had that storyline
I think
at
you
that
have
point.
To have that. Yeah. Have to have a bit of that conversation, right? Where it kind of gets, like, sexual between you and Delilah. You don't remember that?
I don't know if I got
maybe,
too
maybe
much
it
of
isn't.
That.
Maybe it doesn't.
Yeah. Happen. Hmm. Interesting.
So, you know, a little bit, but, you know, there's the normal sense in a game, right? Where you go, oh, there's an opportunity to, like, they're going to kiss. This is fucking Fire Emblem Awakening or whatever. And you can ask her, like, hey, wait for me. Don't leave first,
oh, yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. And I asked her to stay and was thinking, wow, I wonder what this game's going to do. And it's actually, like, a third person.
Mm-hmm.
And she's already gone, oh, you know, yeah. and she sort of spurns you. And even the idea of, like, swapping and saying, oh, you tell me what I'm going to do. And I tell her, like, oh, come to whatever. And she's like, nah, you should go to your wife.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, man, that's a little harsh. But, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Yeah. I never knew if she felt sorry for him
mm-hmm.
or
pitied him.
Yeah. Or really empathized. Like, I don't know if she felt... I don't know how much of herself she saw in him or if she just looked at him as kind of like a... broken person and
yeah.
you know, didn't have a lot of empathy. It was a very ambiguous relationship the way I played it.
I mean, I got the sense that she did see herself in him and that's sort of why she didn't stick around.
Mm. Yeah, because it's too close almost.
Yeah.
So how about the main mystery of the game?
Oh, yeah, the main mystery.
Yeah.
Who is this mysterious person that punched me in the back of my head?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. So, and it's pretty soon, right? Like, it's...
Well, I mean, so you mess around with the teenagers, and I threw the radio in the lake.
I was carrying it around, and then I was like, well, maybe I'll put it down. And when I put down, it just dropped on a rock and busted open.
Oh, no way.
I was like, well, because it's broken now.
My bad. Yeah, so pretty quickly, you get the sense, oh, man, something weird is going on.
Yeah.
Maybe it's these teenagers, because, like, the wire is cut. And then you start getting to this weird, like, paranoia thing. Like, there's a team of scientists... who are recording our conversations.
But did you see, like, the guy who is kind of watching you from the
yeah,
ridge that
yeah,
one
exactly.
time?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get the sense, you know, there's somebody else out here, and maybe there's a greater paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets really, like, to an extreme, right?
Yeah.
At one point, you find the scientist camp, you break in, you find mm-hmm. notes from them about you,
yeah.
You know, theoretically.
Yeah.
By the way, at that point, they have this, like, garden, like, squirt off, like,
oh, yeah.
like they're doing a dig site. And you can grab a bunch of shit from their tent. So I grabbed all these, like, jars of peanut butter
just
and just, like, fuck your dirt pile. Like, just threw it out there on the ground.
At first, I was walking around it, and then I thought to myself, wait a second. Why do I care about
yeah.
these guys?
Crunch,
and then
crunch,
I walked
crunch.
On top of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, fuck these guys. It gets to a very extreme level of paranoia.
Yeah.
And then you discover that it's actually kind of a more sad story
yeah.
about a guy who... didn't really treat his son very well, was kind of a shitty father.
Right.
And his son died in a climbing accident.
Yeah.
You know, quote unquote accident. I don't think it was murdered, but
yeah.
the son, you know, it's clear that he doesn't like rock climbing. He doesn't feel completely safe
yeah.
with it. And then, you know, you find his body and it messes Dyla up quite a bit. That's a pretty cool moment, but I think that if you're going to levy any criticism at Firewatch, and I think you can, it's that middle part, I think, that is the extreme amount of paranoia and misdirection.
Yeah.
That I think can work, but it's not that... Emily Short actually wrote a really good article that was reposted on Gamma Sutra about the same thing. And it's not that the ending is bad because it doesn't pay out what you thought the story was about, but that middle part is so extreme and so full of mystery and gets a little bit too far away from the more touching story about the father and son and the relationship between Henry and Delilah, that it's sort of distracting, right? Like, for me, I completely sort of forgot about those two characters because I was sort of wrapped up in this bigger story of, like, well, who's watching them? What is this weird? I mean, it's like the X-Files or something that I miss some of those side bits when Delilah's talking about the kid that she had in the past. I thought it was just sort of a throwaway thing, not the crux of the story. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if they had toned down that middle part and focused more on developing those two characters as well as the father and son, I wouldn't have forgot about them. And the emotional impact at the end of the game when you realize, you know, all of this is sort of the way that guilt is expressed through this one guy, it would have landed harder.
There was, I guess now that you put it that way, there was a time when I did have to, like, do a quick gut check to be like, okay, wait, who are Ned and Brian? Okay, here's why I care about them. Like, what did Delilah say about Ned? Like, because there were also those other two characters that you never really...
Like the other Rangers that are, like, passing notes to each other and stuff, like, right?
Ron, was it?
And Ron? Dave? Yeah, Ron and Dave. That's right,
And then there was, like, a pretty... like interesting, like maybe unrequited love story beneath there, like, because, like,
that's Firewatch too, Scott.
Back to the mountain,
Snowwatch.
And I thought that was pretty back neat. To the mountain. But, like, so I think that, you know, if you look at it in the context that I was looking at it in, it made a lot more sense for my characters to be more paranoid than your characters, because they were probably drunk the whole time. And, you know, not thinking very clearly. But it got pulpy for a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
it does.
It got pulpy in the same way that, like, there's all those books in the game that are all these kind of, like, thriller books. Or, faux thrillers. Even the fake thriller that the dad from Gone Home wrote is also in this book. Right. Or in this movie. So, game. Like... Oh, sorry.
What is Firewatch?
It's an interpretive dance.
Okay.
I mean, I thought that was, like... It almost turned into, like, a genre thing there. And then it you know, reeled itself back in. Did you actually go through Ned's bunker?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Because when I was... I read something that someone wrote after playing the game, and it was clear that they had not gone through that bunker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I actually just found... This is really cool. Yeah. I found someone had played the entire game without talking to Delilah, unless they were forced to. So it was like a really silent game. And when you talk to Delilah, at some point she asks you what Henry looks like, what he looks like, and you can say, oh, you know, I'm a happy person or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it affects a drawing that you find in Delilah's hut afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So I have here the image, and I'll put it in the post. Yeah. It's what she writes about Henry if he doesn't say anything about himself.
Yeah, it's like white shorts.
Yes, he's white and he has shorts, and that's it. It's pretty great. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and I think those little bits... As you know, as you point out, flesh out those characters where you might get thrown off the track a little bit during the thriller section. Although, just as a section, if you take that aside from the other parts, is, I thought, pretty effective in making you feel panicky because you're so alone.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You don't know where someone is.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, someone
That's the problem, is
you.
It's too effective. Yeah. It's too easy to go, oh my God, what's happening, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you come back and you're... your hut has been trashed, like, right away you think, oh man, something weird is going on, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched the trailer for Firewatch, and it does have that mystery element pretty heavy in the trailer as well. So I was ready for that type of mystery, and it's so easy to get wrapped up into it, right?
Yeah.
Especially the moment you find, like, documents about yourself, or you know you're being recorded, and you end up, like, making a burner walkie-talkie and stuff. So, I mean, it's really easy to get wrapped up in that story. Because you're ready for it.
Yeah.
And they know that you're ready for it. And that's the whole play on misdirection. But I think it's so effective that as a result, I sort of forgot who those characters were.
Yeah.
So by the time that I get to his hut, and I'm sort of catching up, and I'm feeling for it. But, you know, I didn't quite remember.
Yeah.
Like, when I first found the kid's body, right? Like, you find his body in an underground cavern. Mm. I thought it was just a climber. I thought it was a random person. And then he's like, oh, hey, Delilah, bad news or whatever. And I didn't put those two things together.
Yeah.
If I had been maybe expecting that or concerned that I might find his body, and you see it from afar and you make that connection, I feel like that's probably more true to the experience that Henry would have, right? Of like, oh, wait a second. This is really what's going on.
I think some of that, too, is what you talk to Delilah about on the radio, because you can go pretty deep into a conversation about how she doesn't really know what happened to Brian. You know, it's, and Henry even says something like, he's in school, like he's in summer vacation right now, like he left and he just didn't bother saying goodbye, and he's living his life,
which makes sense to me.
And I think that type of dread starts to creep up more when you find Brian's little sanctuary he made for himself, and you find the, you know, the rock climbing equipment, and it starts to put together like, oh, he doesn't even like rock climbing, you know, there's probably worse things happened. I will say though that this might be the only game with a dead child in it.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Like, every time we play a game, we're always looking for dead kids.
That's, yeah, constantly.
But, I mean, like, even games like the quote-unquote so edgy games, like, you know, GTA 5 or something.
Or Fallout, yeah.
Fallout, no children. Yeah. Nothing, right? There's almost never...
I mean, children are rare in games, period.
Yeah.
Let alone dead kids.
And children in a violent, like, you know, children that meet with violence in a video game is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
And I thought that this was done in like pretty much the best way possible, in a way that, like, you know, was not super exploitative and not meant to like galvanize Henry to do action. Like, this wasn't like a Taken type situation. This was, you know, like, because I mean, you could easily,
I have
just,
literally,
like,
no skills.
I mean, like, you could easily do the, like, oh, you know, you kidnapped my girlfriend and now we're gonna do a thing, or it's like, you hurt this child and now I'm gonna be a badass. It's like, it's more like, you just learn more about this family because of this, you know, like, it's not, I felt like the child's death was not just a blatant tool to learn more about Henry.
Yeah. I mean, and you learn about the kid, right? Like, you see his comics that he's drawn, and you see in his little bungalow in particular, like, you get a sense of who this kid was, and Delilah talks to you about who he was and that he was nice and smart and curious. Yeah.
And it, he affected Delilah, because even when you go into her tower, you find like fantasy novels.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, comic
so,
books.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of cool that she also took something from, you
know, yeah, exactly. And so it's not like a grab, right? It's not like, oh, dead kids are sad, here's a dead kid.
Right.
It's, you know, this is a character and he's gone now, and that's, you know, it's tragic.
Yeah. I thought that was good. Did you get any, did you feel any like change of heart for Ned once you like learned more about him, or like went through his bunker or did anything?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of saw him just as another person trying to run away, right? But in even more stark relief. Like, he's committed a far worse sin.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not just that. Like, you know, even if it wasn't his fault, he left his kid in a cave.
Dude. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He has the keys. We know he has the keys because it's his keys that you find.
He just didn't want to face it. Like, he didn't even want to face reality by telling anyone.
And that's like a level of, like, I understand, like, that's, it's tragic for him. Yeah. And I think to some extent he thinks he's probably suffering enough by being out there in the woods and not being discovered.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll just pretend that I'm dead and sort of be in purgatory as punishment.
Mm-hmm.
But in a weird way, it's almost not enough, right? Like, true punishment would be facing what you did and owning up to it. And so I think Delilah at one point says, like, oh, he murdered him. And I think I just said, yeah, you know what? He wasn't a good father.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it was malicious. But, you know, even now, like, no, he's not doing his duty of confronting it.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like, what the whole story about Delilah and Henry are, right? Like,
neither of them do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all of the, I mean, and it's kind of sad because maybe the only person that confronts anything that is, like, harsh or troubling is probably Brian.
Yeah.
And, you know, he dies at the end, you know, like he confronts, there's this, like, that super sad postcard where he's writing his neighbor about not being able to mow his lawn. And, oh, also, can you tell my dad when school starts? Because I know he won't remember.
Oh, my God.
You know? So it's like he's the only one that's like facing something like in a practical manner.
Yeah.
And, you know, his reward is not good for doing that.
Yeah,
you know?
that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I like the fact that, I mean, you know, we all know what was going to happen because it's called Firewatch, but the forest burns down. But it's good, right? Like, you know, if we're talking about a story in which you can't really escape what you have to do, right? Like, if you want to be a good person, you have to face the, you know, your
gotta face consequences in reality.
Yeah, consequences, yeah. And the ugly parts of yourself, yeah. Right? And nature is seen as this, like, oh, it's beautiful, it's a place of escape, yeah. It's a place of finding yourself and recreating yourself. And it's like, nope, nope. Like, we're just gonna burn it all to the ground.
Yeah.
This space isn't even here anymore, like, literally, right? Yeah. You cannot be here anymore and not face, yeah. You know, the what you've done.
Yeah. That's again, not a happy ending necessarily for, you know, especially people who are used to, like, I'm going to take the good ending, you know, yeah. Like, there's just, it's just not going to happen that way. But I thought it was strong.
What do you like more, this or Gone Home? If it's fair to ask.
Face to face.
Face to face.
Walking Simulator.
Gone Watch. Fire Home. We're going to mod these, by the way, and put in guns.
Well, yeah.
I wonder if you can speed run. What speed running?
I mean,
this would be like,
you could definitely, because there's multiple paths that you could take.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's some paths that are, like, faster than others.
I was wondering if you can, like, glitch through bushes and stuff.
Probably, like, glitch, like, through, like, ahead. Go down to the cave or whatever. And, like,
I mean, it's actually really funny, because imagine a speed run, right, where he just walks, I mean, you never talk to Delilah. You're, yeah. Just, like, constantly walking up, grab a radio, throw it into the ruins of the lake, keep moving.
I feel like having a sense that you're in a place was stronger with Firewatch because of the map and because of the ability to get lost.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I connected a bit more with the characters in Gone Home.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment.
And I also think that there might be deeper dialogue trees, not dialogue trees. There's, like, deeper audio logs in Gone Home. Like, you, yeah. Just have to do more listening.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. That being said, I think Firewatch tells its story much better than, yeah. Gone Home does.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're both, like, they're great, like, complements to each other.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a part of another, like, of this, like, kind of growing list of modern adventure/narrative-driven games,
mm-hmm.
that is, like, extremely strong. And that stuff is just going to keep getting stronger, too. Yeah. Like, Tacoma is, like, you know,
it's
coming pretty soon.
It's February, and people are like, oh, Game of the Year is, yeah. This. Like, that Dragon Cancer and Firewatch. Like, man.
Yeah, I think so. And also games that are, like, willing to, like, look at time in a different way, too. Like, it jumps around, like, day 5, and then, like, let's fast forward a month,
yep.
You know, and see how characters, like... I like, you know, being able to kind of take a different narrative path,
yeah.
You know, rather than just kind of sequentially going through an experience.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
What did you think? Comparisons to other, like, similar ilk?
I mean, I think your assessment of Gone Home versus Firewatch is apt.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. You know, I still really like Life is Strange. I mean, it's not really,
yeah.
One and the same, but I think the way that they deal with conversation and dialogue is really interesting as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it makes me hopeful.
Or something like Beyond. Like, Beyond Two Souls is,
yeah.
Kind of, like, interesting because there's not really... Like, in this game, there's no failure state.
Right.
And, like, even David Cage is going towards that trajectory of, like,
totally.
No failure states. You know, just,
yeah.
A story.
It makes me glad, right? Because we've talked about Game of Thrones, the Telltale,
mm-hmm.
game, and a feeling that, you know what, they're kind of stuck in their formula,
yeah.
In a way. And we wish they would learn more from others.
Yeah.
And I think what they've discovered is a really successful formula. So, of course, it makes sense to continue doing that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that other people are... playing with the form of narrative storytelling in these types of games in little minute ways. I mean, it's,
yeah.
Not like they're throwing everything out the bucket,
right?
And,
yeah.
You know, forcing
and learning from the other games.
Yeah,
know,
exactly,
like, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, yeah. It makes me hopeful that we can keep having some cool interactive stories.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, two big thumbs up from
experiencepoints.net. That's our scale. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, obviously,
three wildfires out of three.
Game's hot fire. Paid off by Campo Santo, of course.
Exactly.
We're in the pocket of big indie. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our lookout tower. Mm. Help us out. Give us a star rating.
That's actually how we record. George and I just do this over radio. We're actually like 6 miles away from each other.
Yep, it's true.
All right, until next time, everyone. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye. Every time.